Welcome to the Nextcloud Podcast.
So joining us today on the Nextcloud Podcast is Bernd. Bernd, I'm very honored to have you joining us and really happy that you can make the time. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. I'm always proud to tell what we've done with Nextcloud.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting into it. Would you be willing to give us a little introduction?
Yes, of course. So my name is Bernd Rederechter, which is very difficult for English-speaking persons, so Bernd is enough. And I'm here since 1996. I'm a Magenta guy in Germany. So Magenta, you may know, Deutsche Telekom is the ninth biggest brand worldwide since this year. So quite a big company I'm working for. And T-Systems is part of this big company. So it's more or less the IT branch of Deutsche Telekom. So we are really doing IT solutions and infrastructure for our customers, for customers of Deutsche Telekom, for business customers of Deutsche Telekom, and also do services for Deutsche Telekom. My role is principal lead architect. In other companies, you're maybe a CTO with this one, but for a big one like that, you're just an architect. and my task that I've done all the time is developing software and bringing them to the market. Strategic projects in Germany before, done it with greenfield rebuilds of business areas of Deutsche Telekom. So always doing the big ships, more or less. And I think what we are talking about, the Nextcloud project, is also one of the bigger ships, but maybe very hidden, that the ship is so big, so I don't think that anybody is perceiving it from the outside, what actually is behind the scenes with that one.
Well, I think that's what we'll be discovering today, which is I'm looking forward to. Now, it sounds like you have clearly a technical-leaning interest. That's how you got to this place. But I would imagine working through these big projects, there's also a lot of juggling various challenges and roles and working with a lot of people as well. And so can you guide us through the growth that you had through the company? Because you said 19 years, right? Which is impressive.
Yeah. So actually, if you're talking about big ships and architecture, you it's not something like you usually see that you are doing the technology, gaming, and everything else is left to the project lead or something like that. This is why lead architect is also in my title. So it's more end-to-end responsibility for that one. You are really forced to keep all the threads together in the project and be it on the business side, be it on the planning side, be it on the people side also. So you usually have an architecture team and you really have to play with the clients and with the people. And nowadays it's also because you're doing DevOps. It's really having the people in one, you build it, you run a team together and have them communicate together with each other. And so it's a lot about communication in the end and learning different languages and switching between languages. So it's actually the translation function is the maybe even more important sometimes than the deep technology stuff. Also, the people usually say that my T-shape, so the knowledge I have about technology seems to be from very high to very low. So it seems like that I can orchestrate all the levels of enterprise architecture if needed. And this is makes sometimes the people hard because they can tell me things that are only approximately right, whether they work or they work not, because I know whether they are working or not. And this is sometimes maybe a little bit of a challenge for the people around me.
But I imagine that's a big advantage as well, because you understand like the low levels, but also the high levels, and bringing all that together is a unique skill.
Yeah, we will see later, and this was also one of the things that were needed in combination with using Nextcloud. So Nextcloud is a technology, and they brought it to market and to consumer market. So it was much more than only getting the things to run.
Before we get into those details, I want to understand a little bit more the relationship between T-Systems and Magenta Cloud. And you mentioned, you know, being top nine in the world. So I'm curious who are the people that you're competing with, for instance.
Yeah, this is, and it's good that we're starting here because this is part of where the story started and where we, how it came to it all. So basically, the Magenta Cloud is a product of Deutsche Telekom. So it's not a original product of the systems, but from the bigger company. It's also a product not internationally positioned at the moment, but only in Europe or especially in Germany. And it's existing meanwhile for more than 10 years. So it started as a self-developed cloud application when also Dropbox started and Microsoft was OneDrive started, and we developed a software on our own. The 3 or 4 years, then the company decided to give this software away to an external provider who was willing to make it a real product and then give it to us in a software as a service style. And they got a contract together with it for 5 years. And then it was this self-developed software was running for 5 years. Behind the scenes, it was not a software solution, but and also not a cloud solution, but more or less a classical appliance solution. So they bought a lot of boxes, put them in racks, and then and then built some small Java on top of it. Worked quite well, still working, but the problem with that one was that it became much too expensive in operational cost.
Is it because of scalability issues?
It is simply because storage is so expensive. If you have to buy expensive storage boxes, and over the 5 years, the whole thing has grown to multiple petabytes of data. So we are talking at the moment of a size about 7.2 petabytes of data we have currently today in the system. Just looked at it before we did the interview. Could imagine that storage is driving the cost. And then second, if you have a relationship with such a big company like ours, the cost control is not as fine-grained as it is sometimes the smaller contexts. So the things are big, and you don't see exactly where the money for effort goes. So in the end, if you look at thing, and the whole story starts when we looked at all this cost and did a small computation on what would it cost if you're doing it on a public cloud. And you have to know that T-Systems has a sovereign German public cloud, which has at least all the infrastructure elements, not maybe these special services that are on AWS, but basically everything that you need as an infrastructure element, like S3 storage, like databases on demand, like load balancers, like elastic machines, like containers and so on. You can all these get with an API, with a push of a button. It's OpenStack, but you can get it in the same way with the same degree of automation as you're doing on AWS. Because it is owned by Telekom and T-Systems, this cloud, it would be a different story. It was more like we can take the data of the people home. And the third one was, yes, there is also maybe innovation coming with that one. Because in the last few years, we had to eat what the provider is still willing to do on the old system. And for some reasons, we started very, very naturally looking at open source projects that provide already the functionality of a Dropbox or of a, let's say, of a personal cloud storage. And we needed a software who is also supporting mobile clients, who is doing having a desktop solution. So of the full package. It took not long that only two or three solutions were left on the table. Then at some point in time it was clear that the only thing that we can go is the customizing that we have to do for Telekom, that maybe Nextcloud could be the right choice to reach the different goals, the cost goal. And also the people should not really notice that so much has changed. This is the problem.
Ah.
I think we did this quite good because I still meet people who say, what? You're doing Nextcloud behind the scenes? Not noticed.
Well, that's a sign of success, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not good. Actually, I don't like this sign of success because it means nobody sees what you're doing.
Fair enough. And I think that's partly what we're trying to change today, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm curious, when was this timeline? Because you mentioned, you know, looking for solutions. Was this 2 years ago, three,
five? We started 2020. I think we started with Nextcloud version. First version we rolled out, I think, was 21 or 22 or something like that. So we started in 2020, and it was a competition because, of course, the other company wanted to prolong the contract. And to be honest, for the product owner, which is not sitting on the T-Systems side, but on the telecom side, it was always the more tempting thing or the more comfortable thing to stay with the old provider than go for a migration. But we really convinced him that he's getting more for much less money. And this is the part where I cannot go too deep, but it was due to the very, very cheap price of S3 storage. It has been and still is a remarkable drop of costs compared to what the operational costs were before. So this goal we reached, but it nearly took a year until the customer really decided. And then, interestingly, we projected the migration for a year. So you remember, we have to move 7 petabytes of data, and maybe with some retries, maybe 8 or 9 petabytes of data. And the old provider didn't want to let us into the data center, so we had to move them all over network. This is why it took a year instead of having a lorry and putting the disks on the other side. So we had to really do it over network. On the other hand, Telecom is a network company. Why not go over the network? Joking.
You should have special access to that
network.
To
go
right?
over the network. And
so with that amount of data, how many users are we talking about?
We're talking at the moment about 2.2 million customers that actively using storage. And to give you an impression how big the Nextcloud installation is that we have, and it is not a global scale where you have many, many small chunks, but it is one massive, big, 24/7 available installation. We are talking, and I just looked today, we are talking about 3.5 billion files. Billion files.
Wow.
So
it's taking me a moment to wrap my head around that.
Yeah, I think we are sometimes joking around with the guys from Nextcloud and saying, I think we are by far have the biggest OC file cache table you ever have seen. So
it sounds like in that time from about 2020 that you've built a close relationship with, well, people at Nextcloud and have been working on improving the back end. Can you touch on that a little bit?
So from the beginning, when we were doing the offering, we partnered up with Nextcloud, and all the big and shiny people from Nextcloud were from the beginning on board. So Rode and and especially maybe to name one, which has a special honor, is Julius Hertel. I don't know whether it's a name. I think it's a name in the community, and this is really, really, this was then behind the scene, the architecture, head to head and back to back that we did to really make this happen. So then we did a lot of calculations about sizing projections and so on in the beginning, also with Björn Schiesler. And then when we finally won it and prepared for the project, then Julius and I had to really look whether the S3 storage, for example, did it. And the first thing that we then did in the first 6 weeks is we completely have rewritten the S3 driver. because of some. It was simply it proved directly to fail. So simply because nobody had really this scalable big system that we have, S3 system with all the redundancy and so on, and you suddenly find out, oh, there are fragments. Nobody ever cared about fragments, but if you're doing certain things wrong on the API, you get a million of fragments. And so we had to start and look, okay, this is not healthy too if you get always fragments during migration. So this is even more unhealthier if you're doing it with the original S3 driver. Or if you upload a file, it iterates again in the web node over the file data, so your upload times double. So this is then also when we implemented something like the upload turbo booster, which is meanwhile I think standard in version 27, and nobody noticed this, but it's a major. If you have an S3 installation and not an NFS file system installation, which few people have, then you halve the time of a big upload. Sorry, not a download, but you halve the time of a big upload, and this is something that came from the beginning from us. And then the really really the partnership evolved, and then we went live after a year of migration in December 2021, and now we are meanwhile in production for 2 years and had half of a year to stabilize. But in the end, we only made it once in the press, but not with the performance or with the stability issue, but simply with the fact that our developers were not able to deliver the Mac client in time.
Those Mac users.
so for me, it was like, okay, if only this is your problem, then fine with me.
Yeah, that's actually not too bad considering the scale. You talked about Turbo there briefly. Can you explain a little bit like what happened behind the scenes to really bring that to a place where it could have such an impact? And it sounds also like that's going to have an impact for all Nextcloud large deployments, right?
Yeah, it had, because if you read, for example, in the release notes, then after I think 22, 23, sometimes in reading the release notes, there are massive performance improvements on the database. Actually, this came from what we found out or learned from the big system. And this is also where the relationship to Nextcloud fostered a lot, because I had never before a partner who in this crisis situation stands on your side and takes over actively responsibility and says, I see that this is a problem, so please you go to this direction, we are looking at that one, and then we are fixing it together. And this made this relationship between Nextcloud and T-Systems very special, because it's a relationship built on trust. And nobody wants to give away this trust anymore, because it's a deep trust. And we know the borders or the frontiers of the product very well, but we also know the qualities. And we also know that it's maybe not the hottest technology at the moment at some places, and it's not what you always wanted to have as a developer in some places. Still, it is something we can talk about, and we are really, for the first time as Deutsche Telekom, really fully commit to the principles of open source and not of open source, but really we accept that it's HTTPL 3.0. We published all the code that all the customizations that we had done on GitHub, so everybody can reproduce what we have done. Also, this is an interesting point that we learned late. If you install our code, you're breaking something, because it's not a problem with the open source license, but with the branding of Deutsche Telekom. So you get magenta icons and this, you're allowed to use all our code, but as soon as you're using the magenta icons, you're hurting the brand.
There's a copyright issue there.
Even if you're using this magenta tone, because in this is the rare case where a raw color is protected by patent rights or something like that. I don't know exactly how to tell. So it's a protected color in Germany. So you will get trouble if you're using this color. So it's really ridiculous. We open it all up and then we have to put a brand restriction on it. But you can even find these brand restrictions in GitHub. So we are fully stick to all the principles that we have, and we are proud that we are really doing the things. Not even not in a bent way, but we are behaving like any other fork and publish what we are doing. And what we learned during the customization process is that some of the customizations or usability things are very, very, if you have to do it again for each version, it's a problem. So it's much easier for us to talk together with Nextcloud. So Nextcloud, the people from the company in the end, and they then go to the open source project and we upstream it as committer. So sometimes we are not seen as the committers because we are doing this together with Nextcloud. The upstreaming is sometimes done by the members of Nextcloud and not by us, because then it's more smooth to bring it to the community because they explain why it makes maybe sense and so on. And it's not this magenta big guy who's coming and telling you have to do it now here in this way.
Yeah.
And this is why for us contribution is important, although it is not always so visible that we are doing that one. As for the S3 stuff, for example, because most of the commits that were done by Julius and not by me, for example. So it's not so obvious that it's coming for us, because we don't want to intimidate the people in a way, but it is coming from us, and we are proud that we are contributing in this way to the community. Also, maybe it's not so prominent and so visible.
Yeah, I can tell just by your smile that you're really proud of it as you're talking about it, which is nice to see. I'd like to dive a little bit more into that open source philosophy, because it sounds like it has some clear advantages. You know, you're getting some of the features that you want to see be passed on to future versions, but also for others to use as well. But I'm curious about how that open source philosophy came to be in the company, and whether that's different with this particular project or unique, perhaps.
I think it's clear that any software developing company worldwide is meanwhile using open source. It's not a big issue anymore. But the problem with Deutsche Telekom is that if you are not really sticking hard to the rules of an open source license, and somebody outside finds it out, the obvious reaction is, let's go to the company and ask for money, because they don't want to. They want, you can say, either you change this, or I want to have some money to not tell somebody else. Actually, this is really a problem. And so it's a little bit harder for a big company to fully be committed to open source, let's say it like that, because of this effect. On the other hand, it was clear, because AGPL is a hard license, you know, AGPL 3.0. So either you fully commit to it, because if you try to get around somehow a little bit, somebody will find out, and then, you know, the hand. From the beginning, we told the customer, you know, this is something that was not in this way done before in the company. So we will go fully open source. And we have a group technology and people who are really the center of excellence for open source.
Well, I'm curious, from that same perspective, like, how does open source fit with you personally? Was it something that you were aware of and worked with for many years, or was that a real opportunity to learn the ways of open source?
I've always, and to be honest, I'm always a person who's open and direct personality fits well to the idea of open source.
Mm.
So I missed some opportunities to get more commercial on the due to that one. But actually, I do all my personal projects also open source, and I know what it means I like to share simply knowledge, because you reach much more with this openness than with closeness. Maybe you earn more money with closeness, but this is a different story for me. So in the end, if you really want to give back to a community, the only way to do is by open source. And for the company, it was a little bit like the problem, because there's always this fear of maybe by coincidence you give out secrets of your company and you get into a business disadvantage with that one. This is why it was difficult to show the company, look, we are doing it open. But on the other hand, we had no other choice to make this differentiator of continuous innovation, because we get so few money for the customizations, and all what we are doing over the years is just hunting the new release of Nextcloud to make them work and not much more. So the innovation has come from the bigger community. So it feels for me a little like we are the backbone that takes the nice little innovation ideas that come from Nextcloud and put them to scale, so that they get it, that they could go into a different dimension.
What both impresses me about Nextcloud is the fact that someone like Magenta Cloud can use the very same software, sort of, as someone on a Raspberry Pi, right? And okay, it's not all the same, of course, but the experience, at least to the end user, is quite similar. And so it's fascinating to get insights from you about some of the unique challenges of having a deployment that is obviously much, much bigger than some of the home users, right?
And I should not tell it too loud, but actually you can, if you know how to handle it, you can take the apps that we have developed and install it, and you get your own personal Magenta Cloud if you want to. But be careful about the icons. You know?
change the color slightly. Right?
and I think the big differentiator that we have is also that we are actually really... have fully automated the large scale deployment of cloud. So it's a full cloud native deployment we are doing with Terraform and Packer and also Docker and some other stuff. And we are pushing a button and get a full instance of Nextcloud, including every password saved and a password safe and so on and so on. So with a simple push of the button, you can, as a customer, get either your own or a shared instance if you want to on a cloud, and really with attractive prices. So self-healing. So if one of the nodes goes down, it simply heals. So and auto-scaling. So it auto-scales. If you have too few nodes, it auto-scales.
Wow.
And we have unlimited storage on S3. So 7 petabytes. Let's move on. Another 7.1 if you want to. We have enough in our data center. So it's cloud. It's really, really cloud. And we can do this, by the way, also on every other cloud if you want to. But of course, the sovereignty style, like we are doing it on Magenta Cloud, is very unique, because you can do it as a massive scale, but still being in a local European data center with GDPR, fully compliance, and so on and so on. From the DevOps technology, should be a game changer, to be honest.
Can you say a little bit more about that sovereign piece? Because I know for many of us that feels important, but it sounds like that's a part of the company culture and the product culture as well.
Yeah, at least in Europe, Deutsche Telekom still stands for independence of the American and maybe also the Chinese way of handling data. If you are going with Deutsche Telekom, we have our own data centers and we are sustainable, high available, highly protected, even drone protected data centers. So I think we are one of the few data centers where they tested drone protections against. So they tested 3 or 4 different systems and then they let go the drones up and then shoot them down. So really, really fun when they did that one. Actually, and if you think, okay, now it's a game, but if it's not a game, then it's maybe not fun.
Of course.
But sovereignty means that there is no way, because of a relationship to either contractual or because the data is located in where we deposit it. There's no dependency on these other laws in US or in China, and we don't have to give the data away because of this. We are fully GDPR compliant, so if you deposit your data, you don't have to fear that an American company is getting touch of your data. And this is at least for German people, is this something that I want to control my privacy, my data privacy in a way. And this is why this plays a role as a differentiator, at least in Germany. But I'm pretty convinced that this is something that is more common because of what's happened in the world. It's maybe not good that we are getting a little bit more closed and want to keep the things protected from others, but maybe it's the only way to go. And I think Frank Karliczek is also a very fan of keeping the things sovereign, for example, to have our own sovereign artificial intelligence development and something like that. So I think we are here very on the same page, and with the difference that we actually really, really did it now. So we are there. So everything is there. And by the way, you can have this from us. So we can build the same for you. And meanwhile, we even have two choices. You can really have it completely from Telekom with Open Telekom Cloud, or we have this sovereign cloud thingy on Google Cloud. So you can have the Google Cloud technology combined with the data protection of German laws or GDPR laws. It's a tricky way how it is done by the keys are not accessible to Google, so they cannot access anything because they cannot access the keys. Something like that is happening there. But actually, it is what you need. It is, you need to get the dynamics of cloud, the speed of cloud, the flexibility of cloud, paired with the protection of your data and the protection of your, maybe even your intellectual property somehow. There's also no reason why you have to let an agency in to spy you out in a way. So there's no, this is really what sovereignty means.
It feels to me like that push towards sovereignty is a reaction to mishandling of so much data in the last, 10 years. And so it seems like it's more important now than ever. And I would imagine you feel that exact way.
Yeah, the thing is, on the other hand, if I can make the things open, I would do them open. So then the sovereignty is not a differentiator. But we are talking here about business to consumer market, where the people really trust you and give you the pictures from your last family celebration, where you may have invited somebody who you don't want to show everybody on the picture.
And you keep coming to this principle of trust as well, which it sounds like that's just an underlying facet of everything that you're doing, which is refreshing to hear, actually. I'm curious, from that context that we just explored, who then, in your mind, is the perfect customer for Magenta Cloud and this solution?
Actually, we have, in the consumer installation that we have all perfect customers. So we have we have exactly the people that we want, and we hope that the people like it. And everybody is welcome to get a free email account and then also get a free access to Magenta Cloud. But actually, the real power that I see at the moment, we are not really exploiting. What you have to know is we have also business-to-business installation. It's a little bit different. So in Magenta Cloud is a personal story, but we have also a Magenta Business Cloud installation where you can register as a company and say, okay, I have 14 people, for example, in my group or something like that. And combined with the sovereignty stuff, this is a very cheap solution to base very, very contemporary digital solutions upon. We as the systems have gathered, meanwhile, all the knowledge around Nextcloud to really put these solutions on it. Thinking about digital identities, for example, I could imagine if we get really interest from the government or from a company that we can add to Nextcloud a mechanism with verified credentials so that you can share your files. And only if somebody has a verified credential where you said, okay, this person is allowed to see this data, actually can decrypt it. So it's an easy peasy stuff. And you can then synchronize these things to all your clients. So basically, it's the next step after the digital identities to have this personal storage, even for companies, available we are prepared for it. We can do it. But the digital identities are not there. So maybe it's not obvious that this is the next step that it's coming. And you can use this also for schools. You can use this for health organizations, for public organizations, because it finally gives you the freedom to really, really let official places only see the information that you want them to see.
Which is powerful.
But and really, the things are there, all the mechanism that you also need to make this whole feel comfortable for the users is there. The only step that has to be taken is somebody has to go with us and on the journey and implement this secure storage thingy to have a good, let's say, school deposit for thingy, maybe for things. Literature or something with your pupils is also something that is very helpful. So I see a lot of potential with this business-to-business stuff, but actually, as simple as the private storage cloud story is, as boring it is for the people around, which say, oh, it's not innovation anymore, it's old stuff, this thing is all done, everybody is using Microsoft and everything is fine. Yeah. We have it combined with Collabora, with the open office solution from Nextcloud, which we also have at this big scale. You can run the same thing at the same big scale, but still the people stick to the companies they're used to, although they are maybe not like them so much, they are sticking to it.
Well, you made this transition from, you know, a previous solution that was suboptimal to this solution. And so what would you say to someone who's, I don't know, on Microsoft and not quite happy, but they're really daunted by that transition? What would you say to someone then who's considering that and is a little unsure?
I can only tell you that we've done it in a massive way, but we learned that it's for not massive way, it's very easy to do. Because in the end, what you have to do is you have to synchronize everything to your local account, to your local desktop, install the Nextcloud client, let it do the sync client from Nextcloud, let it point to it and sync it back to the other place. And everything else like groups and something like that. If you don't have messed around with SharePoint a lot and have done a lot of customizations, then easy peasy stuff. And you're suddenly free of that one. Of course, there are some things that maybe are much nicer because integrated for Google Drive or for Microsoft, because it's integrated in your desktop. This is maybe not what you really get with Nextcloud. You get a little bit used that it's a little bit more separated than with this integrated solution. On the other hand, you have the brand of Deutsche Telekom who is standing in for your data, which maybe then is what you're exchanging the comfort with. If this is worse for you, then let's do it.
It's that trust aspect again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it sounds like you're a forward-looking kind of dreamer personality from what I can tell, and I find that very exciting. And so I'm curious, for you, like, what are some technologies you're looking forward to? But also, you know, within this Nextcloud project, is there some sneaky stuff you can say that you're working on that you're excited about, or some features you're looking forward to? And then just a bit more generally with technology, what's exciting you?
Yeah, concerning Nextcloud, we have done a lot of experiments with artificial intelligence, of course, because everybody's talking about it. But actually, Nextcloud has also some new cool features, and we experimented around with having automatic album generation, so impressions, I think it's called on the Apple side. You know, we have all this Magenta TV stuff. So we have this Magenta TV. So we have a lot of people who have a TV and have broadcasting from us, and they have Magenta Cloud, and you can then make your albums with the normal clients. Then you can review them on the TV. This is something that you can do with Magenta Cloud also.
Lovely.
Because we have some partner integrations, and this is one of them. So we experimented with that one, but actually the company decided that this is not the next innovation they want to finance. So yeah, the second part of the question maybe was that private. I actually did a lot of the customization work that we had done for Nextcloud. I did was in assisted by AI, to be honest. So a lot of our customizations were reworked in a much more portable way, and this was the help of some ideas coming from the large language models and Gen AI. So this is something I stumbled naturally over it, and now I'm not a fan of it, but for, let's say, I like to have an assistant, something like that. And personally, I'm always in technology, so we have a little makeup base here together with my son. So we have a lot of 3D printers, laser cutters, and something like that, and doing home automation stuff and doing strange things with either with the house or with the model railway or whatever you wish to do. So I'm always I've always been a technology guy, and for me, technology is more than a profession. It's my hobby. It doesn't feel always like a profession. It sometimes feels simply like something you're made for.
Does it in that way feel like, you know, even when you're in your profession, that you have the opportunity to play?
We have actually Intersystems is a company which allows a lot of playing. Also, the people usually complain that they are not getting paid for this much playing they are doing. So from my perspective, I feel always that we have a lot of freedom to play with new technologies and even to use them in projects. This is what I really, really appreciate about my company, because you get a chance to always use the new stuff. On the other hand, with this usually comes that the people forget that in the end, playing with the newest stuff is not something that contributes to your value chain, and that you have to earn money in the end. And so I had to learn the hard way, and still sometimes have to get reminded that making the business is something different than playing around with technology. So if I meanwhile I feel fine if I know, okay, we have generated the business we needed, so this gives you the right to play around with technology and not play around with technology to may have business in the future.
A tricky balance, right? I want to come back to something that you said, because I found it really fascinating, and it's on the topic of artificial intelligence, and you're using it to make some improvements. You mentioned that you weren't a fan of it, and yet you really want an assistant and benefited from it. And those two, for me, kind of fight each other a little bit. Can you dive into that a little bit more?
Actually, I think this is exactly the point why we've seen so many use cases, but few of them get actually really in production. I always explain it as the difference between correlation and causality. So what you get at the moment with the large language model is a lot of correlation. So they know much more about the world than you are, but only because they have seen similar things. But they cannot derive other things from what they have seen, because nobody has taught them what derivation means or construction means or something like that. So you as a person can take some pieces because of what you have learned, how to construct things or derive things, you can put them together in a predictable solution in a way. And what you get from the assistants is you get a better way of sorting out the facts of the world that may fit to your problem. And some of the problems that you have, like, could you please formulate this piece of code in another programming language, is something that you could completely solve. And maybe even solve in a predictable way with AI, but it isn't. It is only because the AI has seen the pieces before and can put them differently together for you. And this is the part that helps me to offload certain things that I usually have to wait for and to decide faster as an architect. But it doesn't help me, or it is not, it cannot replace the people who in the end construct me the solution. So at the moment, if the people think about, now the intelligence is coming. Yeah, it's one form of intelligence. It is this imitating intelligence. You have seen something, and you can solve something else by imitating what you've seen before. This is a form or a part of intelligence, but intelligence is not there. And this, if you have understood that, you can very effectively use what you get, and you don't have to fear it. Don't know what happens in the other fields sooner or later. Maybe we will see also progresses in these fields. But this one field, this imitating intelligence field, I think, it is now clear how it looks like. It will progress in a certain way, but it will. I don't think that it will go exponentially.
Yeah.
Other people think it goes exponentially, but I think this one has its, as every technology has its peak and then goes down again. And before we have not completely understood intelligence, I don't think that we could talk about it in the way that people talk at the moment, because it is not. It is only a small snapshot of a part of intelligence that we have at the moment.
And is that a perspective that you gained by using it intimately to try to solve problems?
Actually, yes. And by, let's say, having all these years of experience, because the problems that I bring to the AI are much more engineered than maybe what a normal person brings, because I know already some trade-offs, so I exclude certain trade-offs naturally and give them a certain direction, what I want to, basically want them to search on the internet knowledge and say, okay, this is exactly what I need in this shape and so on and so on. And then I see how this artificial intelligence, if it goes at the edge of what you could have seen, you see how it fails. So you not always get the right answer to what it is. You often have this, I like this, ChatGPT has the thumbs up and thumbs down, so you can tell the ChatGPT, look, your answer was this one, down and not up.
Right.
So I have, let's say, 30 to 40% of the answers, I have to say, okay, this doesn't fit, because, yeah, you have not seen the solution, or at least this part that I need, where I need the hint, where it gets a little bit further, you have not seen yet. So for me, it's good, because this means, it indicates to me that I've hit a point where few people have really, really expertise with at the moment. So I experience this AI differently, and not and maybe also with my education as in IT technology, maybe I understand the mechanisms behind a little bit, and so it's, for me, it's not a big miracle what's going on there. It's more like, okay, this time the statistic has failed. This time the statistic has worked astoundingly well. So, yeah.
Does it feel a little bit like a magic trick where if you don't understand what's happening in the back, then it feels surreal? But once you know, because of your technical background, you know how, you know what's happening behind the curtain, and it's a little less fantasy, but you then can use it for its strengths.
The thing is, what's really feeling strange is this is compared to other things in informatics before, you have this problem with correlation. How could statistic find out that these things correlate? But it looks like this, when learning the internet, this ChatGPT thingy has seen so many correlations of this one that it actually is relevant for statistics that this correlates. It's astonishing what you can find out by hidden correlations that you were never able to get before. So for me, this is the part of the miracle, where these correlations come from. But I don't feel nervous about these things, because I know it's just correlation. They have seen it statistically remarkable often, and because of this, they could predict what has to be the next word in the program. And amazingly well, because they have seen so many programs.
Of course, yeah, of course. Okay, well, in that respect then, do you have a favorite sort of prompt template or starting point that really brings you to a place that is useful in finding those correlations? I mean, it's unique to what solutions you're trying to solve, but I'm curious if you've had any aha moments in that regard.
To be honest, when the people see how I'm using the things, they are a little bit amazed because they look at the things, and because I'm ruling out so many side things before, because I know if I have to rule it out to give it the right track, they don't understand exactly why the prompt look like that, because they look completely unnatural. So they look like nerdy talk or something like that. And this is the template in the end that I can give to you, because for me it's simply 20 years of experience combined with a prompt.
Of course. Oh, well, and that's where the strength really comes, isn't it?
Yeah. But on the other hand, I also do sometimes art, so I use also Midjourney or DALL-E or something like that. And there I get much more lost, because this is a much more, there the prompts are much more creative approach and less a logic approach. So I feel, compared to using AI and programming, it feels like, okay, this is virgin terrain you are going on.
Be careful. Okay, well then, I'm curious then on your perspective, because you mentioned a lot of these more closed AI systems, which have proven themselves to be quite amazing. I'm curious how you're feeling about some of the more open source models and the open source world in AI. How's that feeling for you these days?
I think that ChatGPT has been the icebreaker. And in some concerns, like for example, programming, I've not seen something which is nearly close to what I need. So it, and we are friends meanwhile, so maybe it's also personal relationship somehow with her or with him. I don't know exactly meanwhile what I should use. It's neutral gender, yeah. I like the prediction of some of the that some of the people did last year, and said during 2024 an open source model will get the performance of ChatGPT. And I strongly hope that this will happen, because it is one of the missing pieces to let's say feel sovereign again. And this closes the circle to the beginning. If you look closer where ChatGPT come from, it has benefited a lot from the open source community. It is not what ChatGPT has done. Basically, I think they imitated most of the stuff that were done somewhere else. But they were the first one who dared to give it to the consumers. So I think they benefited so much from the open source technology that it would be only fair to have it finally there back. And to be honest, it feels not so close like with other products in the past. So I could see that there are interactions, there are already synergies, and I really, really like that we are sooner or later see that could use open source models for that one. Of course, it would be challenging to have then all the compute power that you need to evaluate them. But even this, I've seen a lot of progress in science to run these, to let's say have the answers produced on much weaker devices. So I'm a fan of it. Also, as an assistant, I would not choose it at the moment, because, yeah.
It's still early days,
simply,
isn't it?
It is simply for me so straightforward to work together with what I have at the moment. And then this other would take a little bit of research and set up time and so on and so on. So it's more than playing around with technology. And actually, yeah, I have enough other projects.
Is there anything you'd like to share with those listening, like maybe a fascinating project you've found recently, or I don't know, a chunk of philosophy you're feeling fascinated by these days, or just an idea that is floating around in your head that you're really excited about?
Well,
not an easy question.
Now you got me on the wrong foot. Yeah.
Easier to ask than it is to answer, that's for sure.
What I'm really interested in, and maybe it's not an existing project, but that's something that's coming up at the moment, is to have, let's say, artificial intelligence assisted architecture decisions. So having, let's say, a bunch of question templates that help you to foster your architecture decision by facts that are that your assistant brings to you and tells you, okay, and this is something that is that I'm starting to think about with my architecture community and to systems, and this is actually what I'm a little bit excited about at the moment, apart from all this maker stuff that we are doing at the moment.
Yeah.
And like teaching the Raspberry Pi WebRTC to replace your doorbell or something like that.
Well, it sounds like with your son, you have a real opportunity, some mentorship there.
Yeah, we talked about that before, only when we talked personally about that. Yes, my son is meanwhile studying computer security, so you have the hacker in your house.
Yeah.
The black hat in your house, you know.
That sounds like a challenge.
If you meet him, you will not. It's the last thing you would think about that he's a hacker.
Okay.
But because he's so a nice person, if you meet him, but actually he has a dark soul, you know. And if he's like me, so if he gets a new toy, he has to tear it apart first to find out how it works.
That sounds familiar.
So and I think maybe I always refuse to accept it, but in the end I have to accept that I think that I'm guilty about injecting this interest into him somehow. So he's actually helping me a lot. So when ChatGPT came in, and I was so excited. The first day I played the whole day, and I get my task of the week done in a day. And I went to his room and said, "Look, I have found something. Do you know ChatGPT?" And I said, "Yes, I'm using it already for half a year. Don't be so excited. It's working fine. What do you think about it?" And I said, "What?"
Oh, man. It sounds like a nice relationship, actually.
Yeah, it is. It is. Also, I think it's a little bit hard for my son because he has a father who understands what he's doing. So you have to always, you're always under the suspicion that you spy him out somehow.
Yeah, but so, you might have the same suspicion in the other direction too.
No, actually, really, he is really a nice guy, and he accepts borders, so and accepts privacy, so I cannot complain. I think I'm the worst guy, you know.
Well, I look forward to learning, where he ends up. I'm sure he'll do amazing things, much like you have.
Yes, we'll see. Next generation.
Next generation, exactly. Well. Bernd, thank you so much for sharing all of that, and I'm sure we will be chatting at some point in the future, and I really look forward to that.
Thank you for having me, and I think we have done a lot of chit-chat around. I hope that it's not getting too long today, but I can only tell the people if you want to get in contact with me because you're curious about more in-depth insights into the things, just contact me. So I think you will put some coordinates also somewhere in the show notes.
What's your preferred method?
Or look on LinkedIn, maybe. Then this is the most prominent social media I'm active in.
Sounds great. Well, thank you again. And looking forward to some of the more innovations that are coming out of your circles.
And I hope we could meet in person at some point in time. Yeah,
we certainly will. Yeah, I would love that. Thanks again.
Thank you.